Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you this morning. Well, buy the dip is working again. Rising COVID cases, we don't care about that. No stimulus, we don't care about that. They just buy the dip and see what happens. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fireworks at the close on Friday, specifically in Amazon. We'll talk about why that went down the way it did. Earnings for today, not much really this morning. Halliburton this morning, IBM after the close today, but the big guns will be later in the week. Netflix, Tesla, Chipotle. So we'll preview those with our guest at 8:35, Dimitri Parganamic. He's the co-founder of Market Chameleon and Options Research Platform. We have some M&A today as well in the energy space. And that'll be it. We'll take questions from our chat. That'll be at the end of this show at 8:50 or so. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and Joel, tell us what exactly is happening here in the pre-market session.
As of right now, we bounced back from that weak close on Friday. We'll discuss that in more detail with Dennis here in a minute or two. But close at 62 and a quarter under cash, opened up 34.70. You basically went up 26 and a half handles. It's almost in a straight up pattern. 34.96.50. That's your pre-market high. Not much up there of relevance. Starting to peel back a little bit. Still up 24 handles here at 86 and a quarter. Mid-range on the session comes in at 83 and a quarter, and then I don't know, just work our way down to the close. But quite a reversal from Friday's close, as you can see over here on the left, to the overnight action. Let's move on to crude. Crude is actually flat here at 41.12, and not much of a range, 60 cent range in crude. Gold over 1900, up $10 at 1916 and a half. Silver trying to sneak into the 25 handle. That's up 55 cents at 24.955. And last but not least, you have Bitcoin trading up $185 at 11,545. Triple D, did you do some late work on Friday, or did you
a little bit. I didn't trade that much because I was in the process moving, so that's always fun. People know what moving's all about, and it's not that much fun. So that was this weekend. It was all the move. So actually, I trade a little bit on the Friday night. I traded for about an hour. I did see the Amazon move.
Yeah, that was
incredible fall. I mean, this happens. It's option expiration. So you will see moves like this happen in individual stocks. Somebody just wanted out. And what happened, if you bring up the tape and you look at it, Amazon fell about 100 points in the last 3 seconds of the day. So just somebody just hitting the sell button, did not care. Stock was 32.50, trade all the way down to 31. The low was 31, just grabbed 60. So I lost about 90 points in the last 3 seconds. And then after hours, it was right back up at 32.50. So those were real prints. If you had an order out there, you could have got done. And you could have just flipped it out 5 seconds later in the after hours at 32.50. So basically sweep down, somebody just like instantaneously hitting all the bids. And then the market's just right back to where it was after hours. So you see these big moves sometimes. That's why we always say, you know, if you want in or out of a stock, you get your order out there on these option expiration closes. Sometimes, you know, you'll get your price.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of some indiscriminate selling there, though, just to, I don't know, if someone got stuck or something, but...
No. You don't know the reasons behind it. It could even be, you know, somebody just making a mistake on a big size. Because it all happens so quickly, you know, it could be an algorithm, it could be, you know, a lot of, you don't really know, all you can do is see the tape, and you see the after hour, and you see the after hours action as the stock's immediately back, but thinking, wow, you know, if you had an order out there, I did not. I wish I would have been. I was making markets in a lot of stuff. I wish I would have made a market in Amazon. I wasn't. Obviously, I probably would have felt a lot higher than 90 points higher.
Yeah.
So I probably would have blew through me. But yeah, so sometimes have your orders out there. Good things happen on option expiration.
And just think if you had, like if you were holding like the 32, 40 puts or something like that, where did the, you know, oh, they're going to be out of the money. Well, let's see, actually 32.72 was the close, but that, you know, that's why you got to be careful with leaving those open-ended options positions, especially in high-priced stocks like that, can really change things on the mark. Where did they get the close at? They got the close 31.60 is where it went down to, but where did you end up getting marked at? You ended up getting marked at 32.72. So wild trading in that. I'm glad I didn't
big
have
time.
It ordered. Yeah. Merger, kind of a blah merger here in the oil patch.
Yeah, we actually have a couple of mergers today, but the ConocoPhillips one is the big one. COP is buying Concho Resources, ticker CXO. It's an all-stock deal valued at $9.7 billion. The ratio, Concho shareholders, so CXO shareholders will receive 1.46 shares of ConocoPhillips for every share of Concho that they own. 1.46.
I have no idea what algorithm decided not to do the math on this morning, because it's fairly basic math. You take the ratio and you multiply it times the ConocoPhillips. So the ratio, Spencer just gave you 1.46. So you take the current price of ConocoPhillips, which is, you could say, $34.30. Let's just do it together so we can teach this, because obviously some people who bought this morning at 54 don't know how to do their grade one math. So let's just do it together. 34.25 times 1.46 is what now the risk arb ratio is for CXO, and that gives you a cool $50. Lo and behold, stock's 49.73, so just a slight discount. For whatever reason, somebody or some algorithm decided this was worth $55 this morning. That's 5 points too high. Basic grade one math says you're wrong, and that's why you got punished here this morning if you were buying this on the headline. Maybe they were speculating some other company is going to come and buy an oil stock. Probably not. Probably not in this environment. I don't know why even Conoco wants to buy, but maybe synergies are trying to figure it out. We know the oil stocks are all in the gutter. So CXO shareholders are rewarded. The reason the premium is not very high on this deal is because it was already out there. We knew about it. If you look 4 days ago, stock already gapped up to 45 to 50 when it was reported that these were already, they were already in talks. So the price comes out, and it's around $50. So whoever buys a 55, do your math. Go back to grade one math. Make sure you do it correctly.
And the other thing, just looking at this chart here, just a longer term, how non-optimistic is CXO for their company here to be selling out here at $49? I mean, this thing.
I'm trying to survive, Joel.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's not even, it's $160, you know, 2 years ago, 49. I mean, we're in this situation with these oil companies. It's not even about, you know, growth and trying to figure out how to make more money. It's figuring out how to survive with oil. Where are we on oil now?
$41.
But a lot of these companies, if we look back to 5 years ago, were 50, 60 break even. So, you know, they can make it happen. They can make it work. And the way they do it is they combine. They start cutting costs as much as you can. Synergies and cost cutting. That's how you survive with $40 oil. So, and we know, like, I just think the trajectory for oil with the whole world moving to EV is not good. So, again, I own zero stocks in my long-term portfolio, zero oil stocks in my long-term portfolio. It will stay that way until, you know, something changes that the oil is all of a sudden clean, because we're going to clean energy, whether the oil companies like it or not. That's why you got ExxonMobil with a 10% dividend yield. That's why you have Chevron with a 7% dividend yield, because the writing is on the wall here. These dividends are not safe.
And Conoco, I mean, this stock, you know, is 2-for-1 stock split since the end of 2018. I don't know. I mean, it's getting a little pop up here, up 73 cents. Where are we at? 34.55. I'm looking at this $36 level. If you're looking for resistance on this one, see how they treat it. But just not a lot of optimism. And let's just go to an earnings here in the oil patch. How about Halliburton? Were they out this morning?
Yeah, Halliburton was out at 6:40 this morning, 6:45. I mean, whatever. EPS 11 cents versus an 8 cent estimate, sales of 2.98 versus $3.09 billion. So I haven't looked at a Halliburton earnings calendar in quite some time.
No,
I mean, they always beat the estimate on their earnings. That's not really saying much, but I mean, just tell us
what were the earnings?
They were fine. Their earnings.
What were they numbers?
Yeah, 7 cents versus five.
7 cents is not fine.
Well, okay.
So that's right. What I'm saying. It's just putting in perspective. Oh, we made 7 cents a share. Ooh, cool.
So a year ago, here, put that in perspective. A year ago, in the same quarter, they made 31 cents per share. Yeah.
The trend is not your friend. 2 years
ago, 23 cents. 3 years ago, 41 cents. So yeah.
They used to make more money. There's a reason they're not making as much money. Kramer said it best last week. Caller into Mad Money. He asked about Halliburton. He's like, what's happened to my Halliburton shares? And Kramer says, they're in the oil industry. And he moves on. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
Buying oil stocks, you're asking for trouble. Can there be bounces? Sure. Do I think Halliburton is a $50 stock again? No. I think when we look at Halliburton 3 years from now, it's under 10 bucks. That's my thoughts. I mean, we're going to have short squeezes. Yeah, we had a nice short squeeze from 5 to 16, but I just can't see, you know, coming in here and saying this is the turnaround for oil. You want to be long oil stocks. The world's going to oil. It's not. Hey, sorry, Alberta, Canada, where all the oil comes from. It's trouble.
13, you hit that number a couple times last week. Doesn't look like we'll be seeing that. If you're interested in potential support, under 12 bucks, you had a couple lows, 1170, 1178. I mean, actually 1205, right where you're at, or just touched, was your October 8th low. Man, I just don't know what to tell you. Major support is under 11 bucks here at 1060. And oil had a nice move, and these stocks and they've been doing this for a long time. They just don't respond. They have not responded. Their production costs are higher. Dennis, remember that Halliburton seller a couple years ago?
No.
He kept on coming in.
Was a buyer. Was it a buyer or was it a seller?
Yeah, it was a seller.
Was it a seller? They kept on coming in. Oh, you're right. For months and months after hours, Halliburton would just get slammed almost every day because it was some seller that just had to get out. And I don't know. You probably notice them more after hours. They're probably there in the regular session too. But I was like, I don't know who sells Halliburton every day, but I'm making a lot of money off of them because I would just turn around and flip it. Or I'd get short because anticipating that the seller is going to come back tomorrow. And it does. It was a seller going on your right for months.
That
seller ended up being a genius. I'm scalping him for pennies and he's making dollars in the long run, or at least, you know, maybe saving himself dollars. And it took a long time for him to liquidate that position, him or her, but hopefully they got out in time, but they were on the right side of that trade, Joel.
I remember you talking about it and you're like,
all the time. I forgot about that. It was like 3 years ago.
It can't work again. You were like, it's not going to work again. And eventually it didn't work.
Yeah, it just kept, like, the seller just kept coming in. I'd be short it coming in because I was anticipating that the seller might come back, and it does. And then I would cover, and then I'd go long, and then I'm like, wow, they're selling down a dollar. I'll be able to get out, you know, only down 50 cents tomorrow. And it did. I was probably, and I forgot. It's funny, I forgot about that. You remember, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Halliburton. I call him the Halliburton Money Fairy. He just kept, like, destroying money out there, like just nonsense. Like, oh, let's sell Halliburton down $2 after hours, and there's no news on it.
Nope,
it was, no, but news. You know what? Ended up being, it was a great call. He could have probably did it a lot better. He didn't have to sell it after hours all the time, but ended up being right.
Yep. All right, Spencer, we're gonna let you take us away here and cover some other issues on the docket. Not much earnings. We got some big earnings reports coming up later in the week, but kind of a quiet start on the earnings front for Monday.
Can we talk about Hertz here quickly? Is there anything on the daily chart as far as a level here? Because Hertz is moving again this morning. So my first thought was, okay, maybe there's something that Joel can find from back in June. But
this is called Squeeze 101.
Yeah.
Let's squeeze them. I thought $1.75 on Friday morning. I thought it was dumb. I think it's still dumb at $2.79, but, you know, I'm not going to short it because we know what these things can do. I don't think there's anything left for shareholders when it's done. But again, I don't trade bankrupt companies anymore because I learned from PCG, sometimes bankrupt companies don't go to zero. So, and we also said on Friday, when stocks fall under a buck, there's no reason to be short them. Because unless you're some heavy penny stock trader, I don't short stocks under a buck because crap like this happens. So even bankrupt companies decide to go up 150% in one day. So you want to play those squeezes and time them. Sometimes they work. But if you're going for that, probably 9 out of 10 times you're going to lose.
Yeah, they'd even had that dipsy doodle on Friday, too. It was up, and then it broke, shook everybody out, went down to $1.80, and then came roaring back. The only thing I could see here is $3. Someone has a little bit of opinion at $3. You got to 302 on two different occasions on the 15-minute chart, 299. We're holding up. We're 22 cents away from that. So there's a number of the day, $3 in Hertz if you're trading it.
Yeah, and just briefly, I mentioned we do have a couple of smaller M&A.
Before you go, I just have one more thought on Hertz, and then before you move on. So a lot of times what you do see is a two-day move because what you see, again, we talk about this, is the Johnny-come-latelys that are like, oh my goodness, I just looked over the weekend and Hertz went way up. I want to buy that. So you see the follow-through the next morning. Usually, if we're going textbook, that will turn after the open. So I would be careful if I'm long the Hertz and playing this out. I would not be surprised if this turns around and closes red today. So that's textbook. Now, again, you're in a short squeeze scenario. So squeezes, maybe you're just going to squeeze more and keep hurting them. But it could turn today. So just be careful after the open.
A couple of the smaller M&A deals, they're at the top of my movers filter here, but small deals, but moving nonetheless, BSTC, Bio specific technologies. They're being bought this morning. $88.50 is the price that Endo Pharmaceuticals, ENDP, is paying for them. So BSTC.
Cash deal?
Let me pull it up for you. Yes, cash deal.
Okay.
So that one's going off the
board. That's a nice one.
Okay.
RESI, this is also cash deal going off the board. $13.50 is your price there. Okay. And those are two or smaller M&A deals.
Hard. There's no trades on these because when they're cash deals, it's already done. So they give the little discount, 13 cents risk arbs are putting in there that the deal goes through. All in all, these things, there's no antitrust issues probably. So that's why you see these things trade up almost the price. And the time value of money is almost negative here. So that's why they don't give much of a discount at all.
Front Yard Residential Corp.
Yep.
RESI.
That's it.
I've traded it before, but I have no idea what it does.
It's a REIT.
It has.
They invest in front yards.
Okay. I don't think so, but all right. what else was on our list here? What about AMC, guys? Would you fade this move this morning? There's a headline that they're resuming operations throughout the state of New York.
I mean, they're talking about going bankrupt. We've seen companies before. Am I going to short AMC for the last $3 here? Hertz is bankrupt and it's $3 almost. Yeah. So I think they announced bankruptcy. It probably goes lower, but does it eventually pop off that? It's possible. I mean, the money's over in this thing. I think for the most part, the easy money was made shorting this thing all the way down. There's still, there is still $3 on the bone here, but am I thinking AMC is a turnaround story? Absolutely not.
Trading up 19 cents. Risk reward is tough here. Shorting it, if you're buying it, you know where your risk is. Made a couple lows last week if you're trading this lower price stock. Between 266 and 280. Your Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays lows. And AMC, CNK, we talked about, that has
I tried to play that short and it started trying to go up. So I covered it. I was trying to play it short. I thought it would have a sympathy move and it was none to be had on Friday off the bankruptcy rumors, or maybe it was Thursday. I might be losing track of days, but they did not want to knock it down. So, we saw in the case of Hertz and Carr, I tried to play it that way too. That Carr held up pretty well, even in the Hertz, when the Hertz actually announced bankruptcy, Carr tried to hold up, and some people speculating there might be less competition. So you got to look at it from that perspective too. So sympathy play isn't always just a pure sympathy play. Either way, I'm still not investing in any sympathy.
Yeah, maybe if people aren't flying as much, maybe they don't have a car, they're renting cars to go on vacations, and they're doing it from Avis.
Don't maybe. Know. I think they weren't renting Winnebagos.
That's probably more likely. We will talk more of the upcoming earnings with our guest at 8:35, but just to preview what we're going to get today after close, IBM and Logitech are going to be your big reports this afternoon. The only one really worth noting this morning is Halliburton, but afternoon we get a couple. It's kind of a lighter earning. I mean, we're not quite to the heaviest point of the earnings week yet. We have a couple big names, Netflix, Snapchat tomorrow, Tesla, Chipotle Wednesday, Intel on Thursday, but not those are the big names for the week. The next week is the big earnings week. We get all the big tech names next week. And we will preview this with our guests, like I said, at 8:35, Dimitri Parkonomic, but I just wanted to give you a rundown. IBM and Logitech for today, those are going to be kind of your only real earnings reports for the afternoon.
Look at IBM, Dennis, after that great news. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, IBM, unlocking the value. What was the news? I already forgot the news. What was the news? I
remember they're spinning off. They're spinning off their one of their units, right, into its own.
What unit is that?
It's managed infrastructure services unit.
Trying to unlock the value, and everybody's like, boom! It traded a 140 in the pre-market that
day. I remember
that.
Yep.
When you get these eternal dogs like IBM popping up 10% on, you know, financial engineering, like Joel likes to call it, it's a gift. And you take the gift. And why don't you take the gift? Because 5 days later, it gives it all back. They realize later that this is IBM. And IBM can't do anything right. I mean, we talk about old school tech not participating. IBM is the poster child for that. This is the stock that has missed the entire tech run. And not only that, like you look, IBM, $200 in 2014. QQQs, $100 in 2014. Now QQQ is $288, so up 200%. And IBM in the same time period has fallen 40%. Talk about a stock that just cannot figure it out. A tech company, the titan that IBM was, and they are just lost.
Well, they tried.
They're lost. They're trying to unlock value by doing spinoffs.
They bought Red Hat. They tried to grow by...
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing. That's why. And they paid a huge premium for Red Hat, too. They paid top dollar for Red Hat because they're the Gilead of the tech companies. Like, Gilead's the same thing. They don't know what they're doing now either. And that's why it's such a value trap. And yeah, you get the nice little 5% dividend. But how good is that 5% dividend helping you?
It's going down.
Yeah, because it falls 10% a year. So, I get 5% of my money. Yeah, but it goes down 10% a year. So you're actually losing 5% of your money. And you're watching every other stock go up 20% a year. So, or 30% a year, some of these techs, or 50% or 100%. So I don't know what, can they turn it around? IBM, you know, Ford. You think about these are the opposite of stories. You know, we talk about what's the hot story. These stocks are the opposite of that. They are the cold stories. They're the old news. Then the companies just can't figure it out. So why am I going to invest my hard-earned dollars into a company that absolutely cannot figure it out? So when they figure it out, maybe I'll get interested, but there's no reason to invest in IBM at any of these prices, in my opinion.
Just took your eye off it, but if you're a gap trader, you gapped
the gap.
Yeah, look at that. I mean, textbook. It held up the first day okay. It sold off on the second day after the news. They were like, no can do. And then they drifted down. In order to fill the gap, you had to get to 124.39. You got to 123.85 and a little pop there. So let's see what's next on the agenda. Let's see. Two highs at 127. That would be the next area. See if we could get a little bit of a rebound. But
Brandon, here's what I'll tell you:
it's
going to report earnings tonight,
and they're going to beat.
They usually do beat, and they'll probably pop a little bit. That pop will be another selling opportunity, in my opinion. I believe it will be another selling opportunity. This pops up $5-6. If everybody who bought the thing on this spinoff news saying, "Oh, please give me my money back." I think even if IBM beats and it pops, I think it closes red tomorrow night. By tomorrow night, it's red again. I will be trying to actively sell short the IBM pop if it pops tomorrow. So, but with that being said, I'm actually long it right now. So I just want to full disclose that because it reports. And you know how I like to buy them ahead of the report. I bought this Thursday or Friday of last week, and it's up a little bit. So I'm literally just in it long, and I'm going to sell it here today. And I will be trying to short it tonight.
All right.
So that's my play. I buy these stocks before they report because I try to extract that alpha, and it often works. Even in IBM's case, it often works. And this morning, it's somewhat working. It's up a little bit more than the S&P, but not really. So IBM's just a dog. Wow, wow, wow. Yippee-yo, yippee-yay. There's my snoop.
That's it. I'm going through the ratings calendar. I don't see too many ratings of note today. There was a couple. I think I saw one from HubSpot. But I don't see too many upgrades or downgrades that are interesting this morning, unless you guys saw anything
I saw
that jumped out to you.
Let's go take a little look at the
trusty
Benzinga Pro. What did you see, Joel?
AMCX.
That's exciting.
X. What?
Where is he going with that?
AMCX.
Remember, I used to like AMCX because of Walking Dead. I was like a big fan. I was like, oh, this Walking Dead show is awesome. I'm gonna buy the stock. And I actually got out of it okay. But I thought it could be a takeover candidate. And then, obviously, COVID's happened here now.
Wow, look at 20 bucks in this thing. This kind of
big support at 20. They did the Dutch auction, too, and that's been holding it up. That's over now. So, you know how you get those pops on the Dutch auctions where, you know, it's a natural lift. You can see it back in September. Well, the Dutch auctions ended, so maybe that's why JP Morgan's downgrading it now to underweight, too. So, that's sell. What's the price target?
I don't see one. So.
I don't see one either. Maybe it's zero.
Yeah, a Bristol Myers upgrade at Guggenheim to buy. I'm not sure that's really super interesting.
Bristol Myers, we can always look at. I like trading Bristol Myers. It's a fun stock to trade.
It's not really any big ratings today.
No.
This
is not rating day. Tomorrow is rating day. Always Tuesday because you got to thank the analyst, busy weekend. Oh, I've got to finish up that report. I'll do it on Monday. Finish up the report. Check it in. It gets out there Monday night or Tuesday morning. So that's why you always see the big moves in ratings on Tuesday, because what analyst wants to work through the weekend? Oh, I'm going to go away from my family, finish up this report my Sunday, and get this thing out Sunday night. There's some people that don't have family life, but for the most part, I believe this is why we see a lot of the analysts. So this is, I'm not an analyst, so I'm just thinking the way logically speaking, that if I don't like doing stock stuff when, you know, on the weekend because I like to enjoy my family. So you have family, you're an analyst, probably putting out Tuesday.
What about Tesla price target raise? This is something we can talk about.
Wedbush, chasing price.
What do you think?
Whatever.
This is just a teaser chart, man.
475 to 500. Is that really a bold call?
When it's already traded there too. But it had that day. I don't know why did it get over 460 that one day? It was on Wednesday. We had some news. Was it? Was it another analyst move or something?
Probably.
And boy, this is just
from Wednesday. That was Goldman on Wednesday. Every day it's another analyst.
Wow. I just looking at this thing and 465.90. was your high last week. So you thought you cleared 460 and it was in the rear view mirror, but you came back down. I'm still looking at this close, August 25th close, because that's a split adjusted close. That's 442.68. Maybe just waiting for Mr. Market here, right? If we get a strong bull market, which I don't know what we're going to do between now and the election, but I've never... When has Tesla been this quiet? Could someone please?
You're right. It's looking well. The earnings are coming.
Yeah, you're right. Position squaring ahead of earnings.
Position squaring ahead of the earnings. So we're Wednesday night. Wednesday night we get Tesla. I don't want to be short 2 days before Tesla. So we'll see what happens. So it's trading up a little bit. I mean, it was an ugly candle on Friday, but it's a little bit. You know, obviously we got earnings coming.
Still a range,
so we'll see what happens Wednesday.
Yeah, just under 420, 420 to 460 has been pretty much your range since the end of September. Pretty rare there for Tesla. We'll see what happens on earnings. S&Ps have pulled off the high a little bit. Nothing alarming here, though. We hit a high at 96.50. We're just hanging out here at 34.89, still showing a nice gain on the day, of course. It had a little makeup to do from that late-day thrashing. I don't know if it was Amazon or just some sellers, but your after hours, your final stanza. The last hour got a little bit tricky, but here, right back up where we traded a lot in the session on Friday, right around 34.90.
We give Mitch some love here for Fubo.
I was about to bring Fubo up, actually, because we've got some tickers in the chat. I saw Fubo get dropped in there, and we discussed that on Friday.
Yeah.
And Mitch with the call on that. Good day on Friday. I don't know why it was up so much again after hours or in the pre-market session this morning. I have no idea, but it's off those highs now. But regardless, good call, Mitch, on Fubo on Friday.
And
Mitch.
Joel with the technicals, because Joel's like, don't chase it if it comes back down, you know, and tries to fill the pre-market gap that I had. That's when you strike. And I believe Mitch actually listened to Joel perfectly and timed his buy perfectly. Mitch, are you still on that?
Man. Yeah, I got that at 10.99.
Holy mackerel, you bought the low. Oh. That's a Joel Alcon and technicals. So you bring the story. Joel brings the technicals, and it's a perfect storm, and you got the combo trade, the Mitch story, Joel technicals. You're getting the perfect price basically at the low of the day, $11. What are you doing with it? You holding?
Well, I day traded it. I sold it up at the 1180 once it got up to that high and broke the high of the day.
Did you hold some?
No, I took about 350 shares, and it was just a bang in, bang out trade. A lot of the times that's what I like to do. But what I think it's really a great lesson in is not only knowing the story, because you can find the right story sometimes, but sometimes we just don't time it correctly. And I think that it's a great lesson how Joel took his technicals. And if you can combine story fundamentals with technicals to get your entry, that's truly how you're going to get a lot of the times your best position for those long-term swings.
It worked perfectly. I had it written down on my sheet, and then I get sidetracked and obviously moving all weekend there, so I didn't actually buy it, but it was written down to buy it, so I just don't do what it says on my sheet a lot of times. This was your story, though, Mitch, and I was like, I like the Mitch picks. Obviously brought us workhorse. He's brought us some good ones in the past, so I like the Fubo story here, too, and you know what? On a pullback, I'd be interested.
I got the next one I'm going to be watching today. I'm going to be watching MGM. I've seen it made quite amount of lows. I like the story to get hot in some of the other kind of casinos stocks, some of the other gambling plays.
Why?
Reason why, I think Penn and DKNG are going to take a back seat. They were the ones that like kind of brought the whole industry forward. And now I'm going to be looking for some of the lagger plays to get some of the rotation money to go into. So I'll be looking at MGM. I like those bottoms right there at the 20s. 21. It looks really nice there. It has a couple bottoms there. So I think if buyers push it through that 22, you can get right back above that 24 spot. And then if someone goes and steps up there, boom, we can make our way back up to 30s.
Holding key support.
Yeah.
That's key.
It gapped up a while ago back in August. And then, just kind of been holding. That's what you're looking for when you're looking for some institutional accumulation. They're not really chasing it. They're sitting there. What are all these lows from last week? 21, 2068, 2083, 2075. Shorter term, I mean, I'm just looking at 22 here. Those are what your 5 and 6 day highs, just above 22, 22.03, 22.08. But see if you can catch a bid here. DKNG continues to weather away.
It's gonna have a bounce here eventually. It's oversold now. I said it's got a date with 35. I think it's still there, but it's oversold here now. It's straight down. How many red candles in the last 2 weeks? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's like 8 out of 10. I don't know. I if you're shorting it now, you're late to the party.
Yeah, trying to work. Yeah, that 40. You see those three lows in the lower 40 handle. We talked about.
I think 40, maybe 40. Yeah. I might even buy for a bounce trade of 40 if it gets there. What do you think? Where are you buying DKNG? Are you looking at this one? Story could get hot again.
I mean, it's turned. I mean, I'd be waiting for those three lows at the lower $40 area.
Yeah, I think you got to wait. I think so, too. I think you wait for 40. There's going to be a little squeeze in here yet, though. It's been too easy for the shorts. So yeah. You got to get a little ugly green candle for the shorts, obviously ugly. And then, you know, maybe eventually a wash with all those longs down to 40 and maybe a bounce there. But I think I like that 40 level as well.
Yeah, yeah. Just a bit quiet. I'm sorry, Mitch. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joel, you mentioned the perfect head and shoulders on that one, the day that it was at the 50s. So
that's true, yeah. Actually. Yeah, it is a pretty head and shoulders. Yeah, yeah, like the shampoo.
Just like it, Dennis. I want to bring on our guest.
Dandruff, too, that stock.
I want to bring on our guest here, Dmitry Pragmatic. He is the co-founder of a site called Market Chameleon, a really good options research platform. And what I like about it, Dmitry, as I try to pull your camera up here, is when it comes to earnings season, I'm always curious how stocks behave into and out of their report. And your site has that. So if I can, I just want to pull up a screen graph here, or I guess a chart, whatever you want to call this, a table of Netflix's earnings. And I just want to pull it up on the screen. There's a lot of numbers here, but I just want to show everyone what I'm looking at right now. And I'll make it bigger if it's too small. But this is just a historical earnings table of Netflix's earnings for going back the last like 3 or 4 years here. And let me make it. There, that's nice and big, right? And this is just how Netflix has historically reacted. This column here, let me make it a little smaller there. How Netflix has historically reacted to their last few earnings reports here. You can see it in the red more often than it's in the green. Dmitry, can you explain sort of this table for us with regards to like what we're looking at here and how Netflix tends to react to its earnings reports?
Right. Yeah. Good morning, guys, and thanks for having me on the show. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. Is it actually possible for me to control this screen?
Let's do it.
Yeah, it'll be easier for me. Let me just see if it's okay. I'm gonna switch to this screen. Let me know if you see my screen right now.
We're in process. You got it, we do.
But just zoom in for us, a little small.
Okay.
I see it pretty good. You have bad eyes, Spencer.
Okay, I've got bad eyes. Sue me.
How's that?
It's good. You're good.
Sure.
Okay. So before, you know, as options traders, we look at earnings from the volatility perspective, how much it could potentially move. You know, we kind of look maybe a directional bias, and we also look from implied volatility perspective. So I'll go over each one of those kind of separately, but this is how Netflix tended to perform heading into earnings, around earnings, and after earnings. So we could see here, just this is the distribution of returns prior to earnings, coming into earnings. So we see here that it tended to do the best starting out 2 weeks heading into earnings. We see that 75% of those returns were positive versus 25% negative, with an average return of 6.9%. So that was the strongest performance. We also see that the day of earnings, it tended to actually open lower more often than higher. So 58% of the time we see it gap down, 42% it gapped higher for an average return of 0.2%. Here we're looking at from the perspective of the magnitude of the move. So, you know, as options traders, you own straddles, you or whatever strategy you have based on the magnitude of the move. So from the opening gap, we see on average it moved 5.9% up or down either direction. That's the magnitude of the move at the opening gap. We also see from the open to the high, the average move was 2.1%. From the open to the low, the average move was down 3%. And from the open to the close of the day, it tended to actually drift lower more often than higher. So we see 75% of the time from that opening, it tended to go down and close lower, 25% higher for an average return of 0.7%.
This is a great perspective, because I just want to interrupt you for a second, because more often than not, Netflix, as most companies do, they beat their estimates, right? Netflix beats on their EPS and their sales more often than not. But what you're saying is, at least going back the last 12 quarters, so the last few years, more often than not, despite those beats, the stock fades.
The stock fades, right? Exactly. So most of that, it's already priced in heading into earnings. So if you're just looking from a bullish perspective on Netflix, you could see here heading into earnings, that's where it made most of those gains. 2 weeks prior to earnings, that's where most of those gains were made. Even after reporting earnings and beating, it still tended to drift lower. And you could see even the week after, right, heading out of the earnings, it tended to perform pretty weak, right? That's 1 day, 2 days. So you could see here, it was pretty weak. And here, I'll just show you another report really quickly. And this is the post-earnings drift. So after reporting earnings, right, everything reprices. And then between earnings, the stocks will tend to drift. And that's basically the new expectation building into the next earnings. Until we know the next earnings, you know, it's all expectation. So we see here that the drift from previous earnings right now, after they reported the last earnings right now, we're at 7.7%. So that's how much we drifted higher from the previous earnings. That compares to an average drift of 10.4%. So a little bit weaker now than the historical averages. Of course, we're seeing some reports in Netflix that they're expecting to have a slowdown in the rate of new subscriptions from the COVID. They had this big increase. Now it's starting to decrease. Also, I think that there's some news out there that that they're also slowing down in new content releases, right? Since the COVID, they haven't been able to update new content as quickly as they used to be. So that might weigh in there. But to your point, Spencer, here we see that this is that in the last 12 quarters, 67% of the time, they beat earnings. They beat on earnings per share, right? For an average of 12 cents.
Right.
58% of the time, they beat on the revenue. But here's the price impact. After reporting earnings, 67% of the time, the stock finished lower on the day after reporting earnings. So we'll see what happens this time. But that's what the historical averages are showing us right now, prior to earnings. Another thing we could take a look at is when you're playing it from the magnitude of the move. I'll take a look at the over here. Now, this is looking at mostly from the options trader's perspective to see how well the straddle was priced heading into earnings. So if you're taking the front month straddle, buying the call, buying the put, really you're just looking for the magnitude of the move, right? So if you're buying it, you want the move to be greater than the cost of this straddle. If you're selling it, you want the move to be below the cost of that strat. So here we see that in the last 12 quarters, that the options overestimated the move 75% of the time. So the average expectation was up or down 8.7% versus the average actual move was 5.2%. So we see about a 3.5% differential between the implied and realized move. So I'll show you what that looks like graphically. So you see here these bars over here, these are historical bars. This represents what the expected move was up or down. The red here, that's the actual move to the downside. The green is the actual move to the upside. Wow. So when it breaks through that straddle, you'll see it like here where I'm hovering over July 17th, the actual move was down 10.3% versus the expected move of plus or minus 7.1%. So here, this is the up.
I just want to, this is awesome to see it graphically like this. And this just goes, we talk about stuff like this all the time. And it's funny to watch, the quantitative, analysis that you're giving. And my own personal trading strategies is like, I like to buy them a couple of days before the earnings, 2-3 days before. And I've seen that positive expectation. And I've always talked about, shorting the straddle. And it's like, It seems like these things don't want to, obviously go outside with a straddle range. I'm looking at this last 12 quarters and there's really not even a lot of heat for any of the straddle writers here. And, it looks like, losses in only maybe two of these cases. And if they weren't traded at well, they may not even lose in those cases. So it goes to show you that it's tough to make money buying options.
It's very tough to make money. Exactly. And you'll see them, usually they'll tend to be a little bit overpriced just because of that, tail and unexpected move, but this is a pretty big differential here, right? About 3.5% if you're playing the long-term averages. And here, just to give you a perspective, here's the long straddle. It was only profitable 25% of the time in the last 12 quarters for an average loss over the last 12 quarters of 30%. So if you did this every time over and over and over again in the last 12 quarters, for every dollar you lost 30 cents on average. That's the historical averages here. From the other side of it, the credit iron butterfly, that was a winner 70% of the time for an average return of 73%. So the credit iron butterfly, that's where you're selling the straddle, but you're buying the wings for protection in case it really moves far away from you. You know, you still have that protection in on the upside and downside for those tail moves.
Dimitri, can we see Tesla?
Yeah, that's what I was going to go. Can we go? Because Netflix is tomorrow. We get at least a little bit more time with Tesla in a couple of days. So can you just go a little further out?
Yeah, definitely. And before I go, like just the other thing, and I'm going to do this with Tesla as well, is that you want to look at the implied volatility, because one way to play it is obviously with the move, like you're talking about, Dennis, with the straddles. The other way is if you're going and playing the implied volatility, right, you could play the move in the very near-term options and then go out where there's more vega to the further out, further dated options to play the implied volatility crush. So here, what we see is this is the 30-day constant maturity. These are options that are not in the near term, but at least 30 trading days, to maturity. So we see here the average implied volatility crush the day after earnings is 31%. So the day before announcing earnings, the average implied volatility is 51.7% in Netflix. Day after, average implied volatility is 35.6%, 5 days after, 35.9%. So that's like if you're playing a calendar spread like I have here, doing the near, either buying the near term, selling the further out, or buying the further out, selling the near term. When you're playing that calendar spread, you're looking for that implied volatility crush. So I'll just do the same thing. You wanted to go take a look at Tesla. So Let's see how that's been doing. So let's just start out again with the stock patterns here. Let me just move that. Just let me know if you see the screen.
Yep, we see it.
So right here, just looking at it really closely, the only thing that pops out in the observation is about 3 days before, 2 days before, that's where you see the biggest pop, the biggest percentage gainers here. 3 days prior to earnings, 83% success rate with an average return of 2.9%. 2 days before, also 83% historical win rate for an average return of 2.4%. After reporting earnings, it looks like, in the morning, it's like 50-50, half the time it gapped higher, half the time it gapped lower, for an average gain of 2.2%. So the gaps to the upside tended to be higher than the ones to the downside. The average move in the morning at the open, up or down 7.3%, with a high move of 17.2% right here on October 23rd. After the opening, this is how it tended to trade. From the open to the high of the day, the average move 2.4%. From the open to the low of the day, average move of 4.6%. So you see there, if we're just taking the risk reward to the upside, downside skewed more to the downside, right? Taking a look at what it did from the open to the close of the day, drifted. It's almost 50-50, but 58% of the time, from the open to the close of the day, drifted lower. From the open to the close, 42% higher for an average loss of negative 1.7%.
So unlike Netflix, it looks like Tesla does actually perform relatively well after, like in the days and weeks after its report.
Yeah, exactly. So heading out to, you're probably just looking at some of the percentage gains, when probably here you're better off waiting after the earnings, right, to see what they say, and then playing it maybe right after the close, after the earnings, because it looks like after the earnings 2 days later, 75% of the time it was higher for an average gain of 3.7%. 3 days later, 75% of the time it was higher for an average gain of 5.9%. And I'll show you.
So what this is saying is maybe don't necessarily trade Tesla tomorrow, Wednesday, or Thursday. Maybe wait till Friday or Monday.
Yeah, exactly. Because just from this historical return distribution, right? Yeah. From this historical return distribution, right? It looks to me like, well, your risk reward was better off waiting after the news than trading it right into the news from a bullish perspective, right? So we see here, You got a lot of volatility average, and these are your average gains, average win rates here. You got a 5.9% average return, 75% win rate for the same volatility. So on a risk reward basis, you know, why play into the event if your returns for the risk that you're taking, your risk reward ratios were much better waiting after the news.
How's that Strata look on the Tesla?
So let's take a look at the Strata. I'm going to do really quickly, just show you guys what happened since its last reported earnings, and then we'll go in there. But, you know, the drift since it last reported earnings, 45%, that compares to an average drift of 17.9%. So we see here, you know, and a standard deviation is 34.8. So we see here that at least at right now, a lot more enthusiasm built into that stock, right? More than the average. So keep that in mind. And of course, they did report, they came out with that they're working on a new battery to reduce the prices of cars. I think that, what are they saying? Like the next car, Tesla, might be like 29 grand. But let's take a look at the straddle performance here. So these, again, these are the implied moves versus the historical implied moves versus the historical average moves. So here, this is telling us that the options tended to overestimate the actual move 67% of the time. The average of the implied moves was 9.1% in either direction versus historical average of 8.3%. So got about a 0.8% differential between the implied and realized move. Not as much as Netflix. Here we see we're heading into the next earnings. So as of Friday's close, we're not open yet. The Strata was implied to move 10.7%. And here's how, you know, we could see here how it's performed in the past. So here, when it broke through the Strata was pretty significant, right? Like we're looking at October 23rd, for example. It reported after the market closed that actual stock price gained 17.7% versus the straddle implying 7.6%. Down here, again, you know, July 24th, that stop is down 13.6% versus the implied move 6.9%. So about two times the straddle. So it could be pretty significant. And I'll show you here, even though over here we see that the straddle was a winner only 33% of the time. If we took the average returns, on average, you still made a 3% gain. So keep in mind, even though, you know, you were a winner more often than not selling that straddle, when that stock moved, it offset your losses, you know, more than the gains.
Yeah, really, really good stuff here at Dmitry Parkonomic. We'll have to definitely get you back on later in the earnings season because, as I said at the top, I love seeing these historical returns like displayed out in this table form like this because it's really awesome to see the patterns, how these stocks trade into immediately after and then weeks, days, and weeks after their reports. Dmitry Parkonomic is the co-founder of a site called MarketChameleon.com. Again, highly recommend it, especially if you trade options. Dmitry, thanks a lot. We'll get you on later in the earnings season.
Great. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, right, Dmitry.
I want to get to some of the stocks from the chat here. There is a few tickers being thrown out that I have written down. TTCF, this is Tattooed Chef. This is the stock formerly known as FMCI. That merger went through last week, so that we were asked about that this morning.
What's the symbol?
TTCF.
Tattooed Chef.
Tattooed Chef. Yeah, but this is the former FMCI SPAC. So now the merger is complete. TTCF is the company, Tattooed Chef, and that merger.
What are they doing? What are they?
It's
they put tattoos on, you know, very good kicks. Sorry, okay.
I have no idea.
It was low hanging fruit. I have no idea what they do.
No, it's.
I'm assuming they're cooking stuff. What are they doing?
Yeah, I thought they were involved in like plantless foods or meatless foods, not plantless foods.
Meatless. Oh, one of these. Well, that's a story, I guess.
What is it again? Plant-based foods?
It's plant-based foods.
Yeah. It's the same story. Every SPAC wants to do an EV.
Yeah.
Plant-based.
Oh.
I don't know.
Didn't Barron's came out with some information on SPACs, right, this weekend, Spencer?
Right, but that was really...
plantless meat.
Well, that was... Yeah, plantless meat, right?
I want to come up with it. Joel, we should come up with this back. The plantless meat.
The Barron's article was more about
the worst possible meals.
We don't feed the cows any grass at all.
We want
a meaty meat. we want a plantless meat. So
we don't give them water.
The cows grass no water. Anymore.
No water.
We
no
feed
water.
The cows bacon. We feed the cows. That's a good idea.
Salami.
It's for the real meatitarians out there, you know, the people who want no vegetable in them whatsoever. I don't want my cow eating any meat at all. This is a good idea.
Yeah, the cow cannot be
plantless meat. The cow cannot graze in the field. It needs to eat bacon.
That would be good, man. That will take.
I think we could make a lot of money. Let's do this back.
We got to. We'll get right after the open here. I don't know. These SPACs, when they turn in, you know, stocks, I'm just looking at this HYLN. And yeah. I mean, you saw what happened to this thing. It's come all the way down and it's not bouncing yet. So I don't know. I'm looking at that chart on the thing, and I like listening to Dennis's thing about the feeding bacon to the cows better.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
See what you started, Spencer, with that stock? Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Well, I started by saying plantless food. Slip of the tongue there. What about CVS here? So we were asked about the CVS Walgreens combo. I did see a PR that CVS is looking to staff up, add as many 15,000 employees to prepare for the flu season and a potential COVID vaccine rollout. So what about CVS here? I haven't looked at this one for a while.
CVS is best of breed, but that breed is just not that great. So I don't know. Sold to you. I don't want CVS. $60 looks like resistance.
Yeah, it's trading up here. Just hit 60.10, up 34 cents. Don't seem, I see a high. Last week's high, if you're a weekly trader, last week's high at 60.22. So you've got to get through that. Maybe to get a look at that previous day's high at 60.80. It's a lot of highs in the 60s handle. How did WBA do? They had their earnings, right? Mm-hmm. And they did okay. They held on. I don't know, remember what day it was. They're holding on for dear life. It still bothers me when I go into this is definitely post COVID. I mean, they just don't have stuff on the shelves. I mean, I don't know if people are not buying it or supply chains or people are getting it online. I just don't understand it. It's and it's not just the toilet paper. It's like all different things. It's weird. I'll have to take a picture. I'll have to pull a Brian Sazzi on that.
Where's Sazzy? We used to get Sazzy.
I know.
When we first started the show, Sazzy was our go-to guest.
He went big time, man.
He went big time. He went bigger than us, eh?
Yeah.
We're all on the same level. He took off. What happened to us?
He went to the street and...
Larry went to the street? Are they bigger
than
us? And
now he's a young...
I think we're bigger than the street. I'm calling us bigger than the street for
now
sure.
Maybe he
went small time.
Well, now he's at Yahoo, and Yahoo's got that Verizon money, so...
Is that where he's at? Yahoo now?
Yeah,
that's right. We're bigger than Yahoo, aren't we?
Well, Yahoo's got that variety.
We love you, Yahoo. We love the street. We love everyone. We're just having some fun.
Okay, what else did I write down from the chat that we want to look at here? We were asked about ACI. I think we were asked about this last week too. Albertson, we were definitely asked about this last week.
Oh, yeah.
Stop going down. That's good news. The bad news is it's still in an overall downtrend, and it's a grocery store that's went bankrupt before. So,
And you always got to ask yourself, like,
and it has that awful ticker symbol, that Arch Coal ticker symbol.
Like,
I keep thinking of Arch Coal, and then it's like bad memories, like Albertsons. Why didn't you pick a different ticker symbol? I know Albemarle had ALB on you, but.
So, you remember when they were Skaggs Albertsons? Remember that, Spencer? That was a long time ago.
What was that?
No.
They went by Skaggs Albertsons.
Is that what they were called?
Yeah.
They called themselves Skaggs?
Yeah. They did a merger with somebody.
Name.
Maybe someone older can help us out here. Older.
I'd rather have Kroger. I'd rather go Kroger.
How is Kroger doing?
It's holding on. I'm still waiting for it to come to 30 again. That's where I bought it originally. It comes back to 30, I'm rebuying Kroger. I like Kroger. I'm going Krogering someday.
When they let
me back into the States.
Yeah, you could fly.
I can fly across. Where are you going? Going to Kroger.
Let's do last one, real fast. Peloton.
PTON.
Stock goes up and up and up and up and up. Oh, I had an ugly candle on Friday. But you know what's had ugly candles before, and the buy the dippers just emerge, and who knows. Valuation's stupid, but whatever. The trend's your friend still. Nice Jeff Mackey purple crayon there.
Yeah.
Keep going till that breaks. It's an ugly candle. It's a little concerning, but we've had ugly candles before. And like I said, these buy the dippers, you just can't shake them. So I'm not shorting until that trend breaks.
Yeah, how about this? Ooh, oh, I haven't done a trend line in a while.
Look at Joel. Look at this.
There you go.
Ah, that's a clean trend line. And look at that.
Oh, should we just get really
so clean? But it's blue. Jeff Mackey wanted the purple. Next time, purple.
Quit complaining. Here, let's go. Let's just really get fancy here.
What are you doing now? You're channeling.
You're doing a channel.
Look, channelingstocks.com. Right here. Is that still a site, channelingstocks.com?
Yes.
Remember that kid that retired at like 20 years old because he bought high and sold.
Look at that.
He
bought low channel.
And sold high again and again.
That's a channel handle over there.
There you go. Where's Joe Chade? The channel. Yeah. The lower end, the upper end.
All right, channeling. Folks. Wait. Sorry. This is a Monday kind of tangent.
This is grade one art. We taught you grade one math to start the show. We're teaching you grade one art to end the show. Look at this. Grade one. My kid's in grade one. He could do all this stuff.
Quick advertisement here. Over the weekend, a video went live, a trader's journey. With Dennis Dick, it's about a half,
with me,
with you, it's about a half hour long.
Holy mackerel, that's a long time to listen
to me.
You
want a half hour of Dennis explaining his career story, how he lost 18 trades in a row at once, how he trades now, how he's developed over time. Really recommend.
It was a rough start.
So did they have Dennis?
Joel used to beat me in the back room there at the old Bright Trading office there. I just say the wrong thing. I'd lose on 18 trades in a row. He's like, go to the corner. Don't you open your mouth.
Dennis.
Anyways, so that's the length that they just posted.
Was that one or two questions?
Yeah, no, one question is a run-on sentence for 30 minutes. So I'll tweet it out again. I tweet it out. If you go to my Twitter handle, I'll tweet out Triple D Trader. It's out there, at Triple D Trader. I will tweet it again here once the show stops. But no, Mitch, you did a fabulous job editing that, obviously. Fabulous interview done too by Ryan. So great job all around, Benzinga. You made me look actually pretty good. I didn't shave though. That was a problem. But like I said, you know, I never shave, so you wouldn't recognize me if I was shaving. Although you see, I put on a collared shirt just in case I had a couple new listeners. I like collared shirt. Just like Joel. Shirts. Collared shirt.
Yep.
Fancy this morning.
All right. Yeah, got one of the many Michigan ones out here. Not optimistic about this first game at Minnesota.
Lions won.
Yeah, they did. They beat the worst Jacksonville.
Hey, they won. A win's a win. It all counts in the same column.
All right. As a reminder, you can catch a replay of this show on YouTube or on every major podcast platform. In the description of this video is a link to the Benzinga swag store, link to upcoming Benzinga events, and also a link to Benzinga Pro should be in there as well. You should get our newsletters as well. We have those newsletters every morning in your inbox. Go to Benzinga.com, sign up on the right side of the page for the various Benzinga newsletters. Please remember, all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Thanks to our guest, Dimitri Pargamanic, and all of our chatters in all of our various chats. Everyone have a great rest of your day. Joel and I will be back at 3:40 p.m. Eastern Time.